Well, Intel is building the world's most advanced high-volume chip fabrication plant in the Arizona desert at a cost of $5 billion at a time when most of our electronics are produced overseas. President Obama visited that facility in Chandler, Arizona yesterday. He was trying to highlight his goal of bringing manufacturing jobs back to the United States. It's a theme the president, of course, touched on in his State of the Union address Tuesday night.
If you're an American manufacturer, you should get a bigger tax cut. If you're a high-tech manufacturer, we should double the tax deduction you get for making your products here. And if you want to relocate in a community that was hit hard when a factory left town, you should get help financing a new plant, equipment, or training for new workers.
Well, the goal is to bring U.S. manufacturing back into the U.S., or at least to keep it here. But how realistic is this goal? Let's face it, manufacturing moves overseas because it's better for business. And business, well, is all about business. So what do U.S. manufacturers really need to keep their factories open? Well, Barry Fox is president and CEO of the manufacturing company Marble King Incorporated in West Virginia. Her company makes toy marbles, decorative marbles. And Barry, is this right? You make those little balls that you hear inside when you shake a spray paint can?
Yes, we do.
All right, that's cool. Joining us also, Peter Morici, national columnist and economist and professor of international business at the University of Maryland. And I call him the man in the bow tie. Peter, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you both. Barry, let me start with you. Over the past few decades, we all know that manufacturing in the U.S. has largely moved overseas. Now, you heard President Obama say there, we can give tax cuts if you relocate back into a devastated community. We can make it cheaper for you to build the plant. We can give you incentives. Would that stuff really work for a manufacturer like you? Is that enough to convince you to stay here?
Well, I think it certainly is a step in the right direction, and his focus on manufacturing, I feel, is critical for all Americans. When you look at the job losses and the downturn in the economy over the last two decades, it's significant, Todd, and it's directly related to our manufacturing base. For every manufacturing job, there are four other jobs that are totally dependent on that manufacturing position. So when you compare that to a service industry position, it's one-on-one. And I think that in some of the high-tech jobs, it's even greater. I mean, employs more people. So I think it's critical that we keep these jobs here in America
now,
and
Barry,
bring a lot of them back.
Now, Barry Fox, have you ever been tempted to move Marble King Incorporated overseas? Would it make sense for you in any circumstance?
Well, we certainly looked at that at one point and found it more cost-effective and certainly more worthwhile to remain an American company. We feel that the quality that we can offer, the experience of our workers and employees here is a great benefit to us, and that equates to dollars in the end.
Peter Morici from University of Maryland, let me turn this around on you. You hear statistics all the time saying the big difference between manufacturing in China and here in the United States is labor, wages, and benefits. You could turn around and say, hey, American union workers, get cheaper and you'll have more jobs. Factories will still want to come here because it's labor costs. Is that true? Is that the base of this issue?
Nothing is ever that simple. If you're talking T-shirts, absolutely. Mid-range manufacturing, medium technology, no. The big issue is the currency and Chinese trade barriers. I'll give you a good example. Buicks, assembling cars, is mid-range. Components can be high-tech. One of the best-selling cars in China are Buicks, but we can't sell them there because they have a 25% tariff. And add on to that, they have 35% artificial currency advantage and all other kinds of restrictions. The Chinese don't know how to make cars. We only make them there because they won't let our stuff in. So, no, labor only goes so far. If that were the case, then nothing would be made in America and everything would be made in China. And comparative advantage has never worked that way.
So, Peter Morici, if it's about Chinese trade barriers, currency manipulation, and tariffs, President Obama's plan to give tax cuts, tax incentives, and considerations to companies to locate here doesn't get around those at all.
No, it doesn't, but it helps a bit. And we're still also competing with Germany. Where they do more for manufacturing than the Americans do, and they have lower taxes. So I think we have to look at the world and not just China. But there is no substitute for a president that does something about China. This president won't, and it's going to be a big campaign issue if Romney is nominated, and maybe if Gingrich is nominated.
Barry Fox, I want to ask you about business and patriotism, because you're a business owner and you're an American, and so much of the politics of manufacturing seems to play off of management's patriotism. Be a good American company, keep your workers here. Business isn't patriotic. Business is business, but I know you're loyal. How do you balance those things?
Well, I think that you do it in many ways, and I would like to say that in President Obama's speech, one thing that he did do, you know, other than try to give incentives, bring American workers back, we'll give them these tax cuts, these tax breaks, we'll help you build factories, is, I think, the most critical part is that he is going to, and announce that he will, form a trade enforcement unit that will investigate unfair practices, especially in China. And I think that that's a critical level of importance. And, you know, manufacturing, regardless of where you do, cost or cost, you have direct cost, you have raw material cost. And if you take labor completely out of the equation, completely out, the cost to manufacture glass, to manufacture marbles in China is the same as it is anywhere else. You have to buy the components that are necessary. You have to provide a heating source to melt the glass. So if you take labor completely out of it, your cost or cost, yet China is able to land their products in our field here for 28 cents a pound, you cannot, I don't care what country you're in, manufacture that glass for 28 cents a pound. And that is a delivered cost here.
Go ahead, Peter.
So there are
really
unfair labor practices.
Go ahead, Peter.
The cost of making a ton of hot rolled steel, labor cost is well less than $50 a ton. Yet the transportation cost across the Pacific is more than $100 a ton. Yet the Chinese sell basic steel products like the 2x4s in buildings in the United States through export. That would mean that everything else is the same. You know, you have to buy a steel mill, you have to buy coke and coal and so forth, and China has to import all that stuff. That would mean that the Chinese workers would have to pay the mills for the privilege of going to work, for the labor cost to be determinative, because the transportation cost should negate any imports because it is larger than the labor cost, and everything else is the same. The task force, you know, we really already know what China's practices are. I think this is really show and tell. The president won't recognize that China is a currency manipulator, which would trigger more action under U.S. law. He said he would do these things when he was running for president, and as president, he has not.
Yeah. And
I think that is a really big issue.
And there are lots of members of Congress, Republican and Democrat, who want to lean on the president to label China a currency manipulator. Barry Fox, president and CEO of Marble King in West Virginia, manufacturing marbles in those little rattling marbles inside your spray paint can. And Peter Morici, the man in the bow tie from University of Maryland. Follow him on Twitter at Morici1. Thank you both.
You're welcome.
It's P. Morici1. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.